Two middle-aged men in Cleveland back for another episode here as we hit the month of June. And, you know, when we started this whole podcast, we talked about, you know, we were in the middle of COVID. And we thought, you know, there's so much negativity out there. We want to do something and have some fun. And, you know, we're trying to be topical, but have some fun. And it is, Ken and I have talked through the last week, and it's become very difficult to be topical and not acknowledge all of the things that are going on in our city, in our state, and in our country right now. And so we're each going to take a minute or so and just kind of talk about, you know, I'm going to take a chance and kind of just listen to myself talk here for a minute. Ken is going to do the same, and then we'll continue on with the show. So you know, the name of the show, Two Middle-Aged Men in Cleveland, two middle-aged white guys in Cleveland, for that matter. And obviously, the major news in the last week, the senseless death of George Floyd and all that caused it, encompassed it, and has gone on as a result of it. And as a middle-aged white guy, during my 48 years on this planet, you know, it's become clear to me that when people say, "You just don't understand," I used to think, "Oh, that's silly. That's hogwash." I can understand a lot of things. And then going through different life experiences, I understand what people say when they say, "You couldn't possibly understand." And so when folks from the Black community say, "You don't understand what we're talking about," I have to say, "You're right. I don't understand, and it's not really possible for me to understand. So what's the next best thing that I can do? I can listen." And I hope that that's what a lot of people will start to do, is to listen. If there were fewer mouths open and more fewer mouths open and more ears open, I think we'd be in much better shape with regard to this discussion and this situation. As far as what happened in our city, you know, I think that the intent was for some peaceful protesting and some, I don't know what adjective to use, but some folks hijacked that and took it in a different direction, an unacceptable direction, and in an unfortunate direction. And I just hope that it doesn't, that those actions don't cover up or squash out the important message or messages that need to come from this situation. And I don't know what else I can add, but I'll let Ken say his piece here.
Ted, very well said. And I will say myself, I am definitely not an expert when it comes to this. My experience is just the way I've been grown up and things like that. I've not dealt with some of the issues that some people have talked about with being pulled over and profiled and things like that. Obviously, I have not had that experience, nor am I going to sit here and pretend as though I understand what that's like either. I have listened to many different podcasts, news stations, TV stations, and all that. And I do know that the best thing that I can do, and you said it perfectly, is listen. Not ignore, not just allow things to happen, but to listen and step up and say something when pertinent. When I experience these situations, for family and friends and my kids, to make sure we're supporting whoever, whenever, when it comes to race, religion, anything like that. The things that happened on Saturday, you know, which started off as a peaceful protest and turned into what it did. I think there's a separation, just like many of people have talked about. I don't think the protesters are the ones that did this, that there's a different group that got involved with that. And it's a shame, because I think from what I was told from people stepping on ground in Cleveland by the free stamp, there was a very nice protest that they have, and it went very well, and then just turned sour after that. But I hope as more of these protests happen throughout the country, and frankly, throughout the world, I just hope people get a better understanding of what has happened, recognizing the issue that happened with the gentleman that passed away, along with many others that have passed away because of this. And we can make some changes throughout our world so that we can become one. You know, as somebody said very well, you know, we talk about Black America, white America, things like that. I would love to have an opportunity where we just say, well, I'm American. That's what I'm hoping for.
Well said. That would be the day that we can do that would be a great day. All right. Well, we'll try to move on here. We decided to bring in a couple guests this week because of COVID and things like that. And our first guest going to give us some perspective on small business in this time of COVID. Right, Ken?
Yes. Laura Cavey was nice enough to spend some time with us today to talk about the three businesses she has down in Medina in Worcester area.
Laura, thanks for taking the time today. We just kind of want to talk to you and get the perspective of a business owner of what things have been like here in the past couple of months.
Well, they've just to sum it up, they've been very challenging. But being a business owner is a lot of change on the fly and making sure that you can, you know, always adjust to what is required. So it's been a heck of an adjustment, but it's also been something that it's been a really interesting way to have people react to the closures and so forth.
You mentioned lots of changes. What's been the biggest one so far?
Well, the biggest one has been, having to lay so many people off, trying to get them back to work. How can I get them back to work with limited hours? We still don't have our dining rooms open at Cool Beans. Our bakery opens tomorrow. So it's been a juggling act trying to do three completely different locations with one person who's in charge. So trying to organize all of that and make sure that the employees are safe, they're healthy, they want to come back to work, and they feel confident to come back to work. That's been the biggest, you know, thing that I've had to juggle right now, because some people are in the high risk. Some people are, obviously, they're actually making more on unemployment. So, you know, those are the challenges that we have right now.
Laura, specifically for your business, certainly talking about Honeybee and Cool Beans, obviously you've done a lot of takeout for a while, and obviously you do have seating in those two restaurants for people to sit. I mean, for many restaurant owners, and obviously you're very aware of many of the other industries and in Medina as well as throughout the Northeast Ohio area, how difficult is it for somebody that's used to having normal dining and all of a sudden you move to a carryout situation? Once again, you guys have been set up like that for a while. A lot of people will come into your establishment, order a coffee or some sort of food, and they step out. You know, some people do stay, but you guys are already kind of set up like that. But some of these industries and businesses right now in the restaurant world, what can they do, or what is going to happen here in the future when they have to continue to do, you know, the carryout situation and they can't open their restaurant?
I've spoken to some people about this, and you know, the fine dining I think is having the hardest trouble with what they do, because their food, the things that they're making, those are expensive products to get in. You don't know what type of demand that you will have for them. But I think the ones that have done the best are the ones who are trying to do the family meals. So there's some local areas here that truly are doing steak packs and so forth, so that you can come and get those ingredients. They're sending that home so that you can make it at home with your family. And I think that for those types of restaurants has been the best thing. I was talking to one of my food suppliers, and he said he had a white tablecloth, very posh restaurant a little further south in Ohio that actually changed their entire menu just to get through this. They were offering things like mac and cheese and so forth, just to get through this, because shrimp is not something, or lobster is not something that you want to put in styrofoam, take home, and it's not going to taste the same. So, you know, those are the types of things that you, sometimes you have to readjust your entire menu. And, you know, I'm definitely a glass half full kind of girl. And I can tell you that with some of the people that I've spoken to, they've truly looked at what their restaurant is and have been able to make some tough changes and then say, you know what, this has worked really well for us. I think maybe we'll adjust and maybe we'll go in that direction after all of this is over.
As if it isn't a challenging enough time, you know, this past weekend, lots of protests and then some rioting and looting in the Cleveland area. And my understanding is that there are some plans for protests. Don't know if they'll turn violent or what will happen, but some of those types of protests, at least down in the Medina area, what preparations are you making, or what do you plan to do to make sure that your businesses are safe through all this?
Well, there's a lot of concern. There are four different marches that I'm aware of, or demonstrations that I'm aware of, that are coming to town. Each one of them has the same, you know, possibility of it turning ugly, and we're really hoping that it does not. But the police chief has been on the ball, and we had a Zoom call with the police chief, the mayor, and, you know, business owners yesterday on what the expectation is. And from what I understand, the police department is planning on just having a tiered response. Hopefully they have a hands off and there's nothing that they need to do. Some businesses are concerned enough that they are talking about boarding up their windows. Personally, I'm not going to do that, but I will remove everything that could be used as, you know, to throw through a window, just to ensure. But I'll be on the square marching with them. I mean, I want to hear what they have to say, and I want to be there in case anything, you know, you can hear what's going on. And if there is something that turns ugly, then I can react immediately.
Sure, that's I think that's a very smart idea. That's great. You're going to, you know, obviously support those people as well. Very quickly, just talking about your businesses as we kind of wrap up here in just a bit, talk about some of the specials that maybe you have, or what makes, let's just talk about Cool Beans. What makes Cool Beans different than your normal everyday coffee shop?
You know, I think what makes us different, you know, you can get a drip coffee anywhere, but we support local suppliers. Everything that we get is from a local roaster or other supplier that we have. And that, I think, really, you know, I support you, you support me, and we do a lot for the community. I think that's what really sets us apart as well. We've started Tutoring Tuesdays. That's to support the teachers and some kids who need some additional tutoring because the online did not work for everybody. So some of them need a little extra help. And the libraries are closed. So those are the unique opportunities that I have that I can react to very quickly because I don't have to go through anybody else. I can just say, all right, you need to tutor. We will open up 5 tables for you, reserve them, and you can bring the kids in and help them with their homework. That's something that I love to do. As soon as there's a community need, I immediately try and figure out how I can meet that. But we have, you know, we've been voted best coffee in Medina County for, I believe it's 7 or 8 years now. And one of the most popular things during this whole time is when we had to close for 2 weeks, I had people messaging me on my personal Facebook saying, please, can I just get some, you know, mocha or some coffee or some something? So we've gone to half gallons. So it's interesting. Like I said, you kind of pivot and figure out what's working. Half gallons of our products are flying off the shelves because people want to just take that for home. They still want to limit some exposure out and about. So, you know, you get a half gallon and hopefully that lasts you for a couple of days, but it's interesting, but I can't wait to be reopened. Hopefully we'll have our dining room reopened, shortly. Honey Bee opens tomorrow to the public. We have only been doing special order up until now. So we're looking forward to getting that started again.
We certainly hope things remain, peaceful in Medina this weekend, and everywhere that, these protests are going on. It's interesting. You know, on Sunday, we got word, my family live in Cleveland Heights. We got word that from two different people who had two different friends that were affiliated with law enforcement in our city, that there was some expected protesting, and they were expecting it to be on the negative side from what we heard. Oh, couple blocks from our house. And so my wife and I made the quick decision to pack up and go to a cousin's house and spend some time there. And, opted for safety and, had to make that move. I also heard about some protests that have been planned or have been talked about in the Chagrin Falls area. Anybody who's been to Chagrin Falls knows it's a small, quiet community with lots and lots of mom and pop stores lining the downtown area. The word of these protests led to many business owners. If you do searches for Chagrin Falls protest, do some picture searches, lots of business owners have already boarded up their windows to keep their products and their businesses as safe as possible. So it's a crazy time we're living in right now, Ken.
Yeah, it is. It is. And obviously, you know, as we talked about before, people certainly have the opportunity and certainly ask people to protest and go up against what they don't like and what they feel is wrong. I think that's a wonderful thing. And I certainly support them 100%. We just ask for everyone to do it peacefully. So, with anybody that owns a restaurant and a bar, certainly understand what they're dealing with and certainly to an extent understand what people are protesting with. And we just hope all these groups can work together as one. Speaking of restaurants and bars and all that, we decided to talk to a gentleman today who's been in the food service industry for over 21 years. I thought it'd be a great opportunity to kind of get some more info on what's going on with people that do own restaurants, what's going on with some of the pricing and things like that. And we had the opportunity to talk to Jamie Powers to give us an update on what's going on with the food pricing. Jamie, how are you today?
I'm well, Ken. How are you?
Great. Thanks for taking the time. Well, it's been an interesting couple of weeks and months for certainly people in the food service industry as yourself and everybody who's owning a restaurant and dealing with the bar, anything to do with food. Is this anything you've ever seen before with trends and things like that and the difficulties that people have had with restaurants?
I've never seen anything that has gone this deep for this long. This is about as stressful and about as an uncertain of time in our industry as we've been in for this extended period of time.
Jamie, when you say deep, what do you mean by that?
Well, you know, of how much it's running across, you know, the commodities. You know, usually you may have one part and say, you know, a couple years ago you had some issues with pork. And you have, you know, parts of pork is goes up for a little while, and then you may have a little bit of problem with beef. But right now, the commodity industry as a whole, fresh produce, fresh pork, fresh beef, across the board is just in a state of, I don't want to say panic, but it's in a state that it's never been in before, with the shortages of products. You know, you're in a time where farmers 3 weeks ago in Florida were plowing over their tomato fields, plowing over their lettuce fields because they had nowhere to put the product. You know, the cattle industry, for example, this time last year, you know, your 300 million heads were being slaughtered. You're maybe starting to catch up, maybe just about 150 to 270. You know, 3 weeks ago, you're at 100. So it's not just affecting one sector. It's affecting everything across the board, and it hits everybody. It's affecting retail, it's affecting, which are your grocery stores, and especially your bars and restaurants right now, where in previous times you'd have, if pork was high, beef was okay. If beef was high, pork was okay. And you could kind of go back and forth and, you know, design your menu and you know, still be able to make money in your establishment. So right now, even chicken. You know, right now across the board, it's very, very expensive. And if you've even seen it in the grocery stores, you've seen how expensive. When's the last time you saw ground beef at $7 a pound?
Yeah, that's absolutely insane. And you talk about that pricing. What have you seen? Obviously, I'm not looking for particulars, but percentage wise, How much of an increase have you seen with, let's just say, fruits and vegetables?
You know, you look in your tomatoes and your lettuces, your especially your iceberg lettuces, you know, it's 100% increase. You know, prices have gone up 100, 110%. And it's a fluctuating market because right now they don't know what they can count on. You know, you have large companies, large food service companies that commit to buying certain amounts of product, and they usually buy it, you know, months ahead of time. Well, nobody could have predicted that, you know, food service companies, distributors would be throwing food away or doing, you know, just not buying anymore because it's just not there.
What is the problem right now? And I know COVID-19 is the problem, but what I mean by that is it sounds like the problem isn't a supply as in there's not enough supply. Is that there's too much and they're having to throw it away, and then they don't want to, the people who raise the cattle or grow the crops, they're having to throw away product that they're not making any money on, and therefore they can't reinvest, and then that's causing the problem?
It's a couple of those things, Ted. Initially, it was the fact that there was not enough supply. You know, when COVID-19 hit, it put everybody into a panic, which then sent everybody to the grocery stores began hoarding and putting everything into their freezers. Well, when that happened, it didn't just happen regionally. It happened pretty much across the map in the United States. And I think that's the first time that something like this has happened that's affected the country as a whole versus a region. So in the beginning, there wasn't enough cattle being sent to slaughter. There wasn't enough product, so they got behind. Then COVID kicks in, and you have these large producers, the Tysons of the world, the Cargills of the world, that are out there that their plants got affected by workforce. They had a shutdown. Chicken plants had a shutdown. Pork plants had a shutdown. Beef processing plants had a shutdown. Now the problem is they have not been able to yet catch up, because now they don't have the workforce to be able to come into work three shifts a day. And they can't put as many people in the plants to process over the course of those three shifts a day. So from the beef and pork and chicken side, there's just not enough people to work and not enough to keep up. They're making headway, but it just can't keep up to where the supply is. And, you know, now you're into grilling season and everybody wants steaks. Everybody wants burgers. Everybody wants chicken. Well, everybody wants ribs, pork butts, and, you know, smoke your pork butts. It's just not there right now in the quantities. Is it catching up? Yes. From the produce side of things, you know, there weren't people buying it. So, you know, they plowed their fields under and started regrowing again. So you just have that transition of time. I mean, how long does it take to grow tomatoes? Think of how long it takes to grow lettuce and how much of that you need to catch back up to where the demand is right now.
Yeah, that's really tough. Jamie, we're nearly out of time. One last question. Obviously, this is a difficult one to answer, but in your guesstimate, when does this kind of subside and things get back to normal when it comes to this industry?
I don't think we'll ever get back to normal. I really don't. I see some stabilization from a supply side coming maybe the closer we get to 4th of July. But it's all dependent, again, on COVID and what these plants can do and what they can't do. And as far as the restaurants go, you know, on top of everything that's going on with COVID, now you have another issue here socially to where restaurants are being affected on top of it. And there's a lot of fear right now. So I don't think it'll ever go back to normal. We haven't even found out or even know what our new normal is yet to be able to adjust to. So quite honestly, I don't know that I can answer that to give you a definitive time frame.
I'd like to thank Jamie Powers once again for his time to talk about the food service industry. Very interesting information. And as many of us have seen, the prices go up many different ways. But Ted, I believe it's a time now where I think a lot of people are looking to get some news.
Some news, yes. Well, you know, we did this last week, had enough bad news. I've got some unique news that I'm ready to pass along. So we start with Jeannie Stegena. She's 103 years old, a great-great-grandmother from Massachusetts. She's in a nursing home and contracted COVID-19 Things actually got pretty bad for a couple days, but I'm happy to report she beat the virus and has recovered. Now, to celebrate her victory, she cracked open an ice-cold Bud Light and has been pictured on social media doing it.
I like that.
So there you go.
No other way to celebrate than cracking a Bud Light.
For all you do, this Bud's for you.
For you. God bless her. She deserves it.
That's right. Well, the Guinness Book of World Records says there's a new mark for largest book fine ever paid. Emily Canellos Sims found the book Days and Deeds, a book of children's poems, in her mom's house. It was due back to the library on April 19, 1955. The fine was about 2 cents a day, so she paid more than $345 when she returned it. By the way, the longest time a book has been checked out and then returned is 221 years. George Washington apparently borrowed a book from the New York Library. The Mount Vernon estate eventually returned it.
All right, I have to ask this question. Who is keeping the track? I mean, obviously, I know in 1955, they didn't have computers.
Yeah.
Writing things down on paper. How did that transform to now? Who was just continuing to keep that? And by the way, can somebody pick up a phone and make a phone call to let somebody know? I mean, does that happen too? I'm not an expert on the libraries, but my gosh. Wow.
Yeah, I
they got their money.
They found their money. There you go.
Maybe they got Tim Misney. Maybe.
He'll make them pay.
He makes them pay every time.
A Fort Myers resident had a knock on her door, which isn't exactly newsworthy, but who or what was knocking is. Fortunately, Susan Gischel looked out her window before opening her door. She discovered two alligators fighting on her front step. She then shot video on her phone while hollering for her husband. After about 20 minutes, the alligators stopped fighting, stopped smacking the door, and headed their separate ways.
One word for you, chomp. Chomp. No thank you on the alligators. I'm not fooling around with that. No thank you.
And finally, an Australian man has been acquitted of breaking into a home. Terrence Leroy and another man had been hired through Facebook by a man to carry out a unique fantasy.
Oh, boy.
The client wanted to be tied up in his underwear and stroked with a broom, offering $5,000 if it was, quote, really good. The problem is that Leroy and the other man went to the wrong house. The resident in the house awoke to two men standing next to his bed with machetes, asking if his name was Kevin. Once they determined they were in the wrong house, they apologized and left. So the resident called police. The mix-up apparently occurred because the original client sent his previous address before he moved from 30 miles away.
Do they give a name for this at all?
A name of the person or the activity?
Name of the person.
Kevin is...
Oh, just Kevin. Okay, good. I was thinking it might be somebody else, in all honesty. Marv Albert or something like
that.
One of my favorite announcers of all time. Why? I'm not even going to go there. I don't know the answers to this, so I'm not going to ask the questions.
Just let the listeners, maybe they
can decide for themselves.
That's right. Yeah.
That's our news, Ted.
That's the news.
Thank
news
you very
to me.
Much. I appreciate it. Well, we'll wrap things up here. Kind of a different show today. Seriously, we talked about some serious topics, and we thought that was very warranted for everything that's going on at this time right now. And once again, we appreciate all the listenerships, and we appreciate everyone checking in. You can hear us on SoundCloud.com and obviously through Facebook. And Ted, before we shut things down today, I have one very quick question. I've asked this a couple times, forgot last week.
Now,
has your wife listened to this show yet?
What show?
Okay. Well, that answers the question. Well, Ted, have a great week. Look forward to next week. We have some other guests that are going to join us, and I hope everyone has a great time and continue to stay safe.
And just remember, we're just two middle-aged men in Cleveland.